Howdy, podcast fans. I'm here with your favorite podcast host, Barbara Bray. Hello there, Mom.
Hi, son, Andrew Bray. I love it when you do that.
Well, I love that you're really enthusiastic, and what literally you told me before we started recording this is how excited you are about this upcoming conversation with Preeton Shah. So why don't you tell me a little bit about what we're about to listen to?
Oh, I was just really surprised. His life is so amazing. He started as a 13-year-old entrepreneur with an idea, and he made it grow in high school and then took it even farther. It was mainly for teaching and learning to help kids understand things a little bit more and clearer. And he kept that even going in college. And then he started another business. It's just fun to be with people who think outside the box and actually do something about it. And his latest thing is he wrote a book called AI and the Future of Education. And so I said, oh, this is timely. Tell me more. And so we talked about his book and we talked about what he's doing with civics education. I just am excited for people to know about him and to follow his story and buy his book.
That's great. And keep in mind, folks, that Barbara Bray's Grow Your Why book is something to stay tuned for. It's going to be big when it's out there. So I'm really excited for that. And I'm feeling the author is too.
Oh, I'm so excited because of I have 23 contributing authors who are just like itching for it to be out there. They're like excited because their stories are amazing. And I just want to just celebrate all of them. And I know that people will, they're just, you can take one story and just hold it to your heart and just love it because that's what they did. They shared their heart.
Well, everybody, keep your fingers crossed and your eyes peeled for Grow Your Why by your podcast host, Barbara Bray. And let's stay tuned for a good conversation with Barbara Bray and Preeton Shah.
Well, I have someone here I've been wanting to talk to. It's all about AI. Welcome, Preeton Shah.
Thanks. Thank you for having me.
Oh, I'm so glad you're here because when we talked earlier, you shared some such great ideas. I can't wait to delve into them. But first, I'm going to tell a little bit about you to my audience. Is that okay?
That's perfect.
Okay. Preeton Shah is a dedicated to pioneering innovative educational solutions that meet diverse learner needs, leveraging experiences from teaching in various settings globally. You know, I'm really interested in that, right?
Yeah. I think we share an interest there.
Yeah. The whole idea is it's about changing education really and focusing on diverse learners, like you said. Oh, I'm not done yet. I got to tell more. He develops tools ranging from animated civics education materials to AI-enhanced classroom resources, aiming to foster healthier democracies. And then you also want to keep educators abreast of rapid technological advancements by leading with two ventures. And we're going to talk about these, United for Social Change and Pedagogy.cloud. Well, both of those sound amazing, but this idea it's leveraging experiences, like you said, and animating civics education with AI-enhanced solutions. I'm so excited that you're here.
I'm excited to talk to you about it today. I think we'll have some fun.
Well, I always ask everybody when they start, what is their why? Can you share that?
My why is pretty simple, I think. I think it's one shared by many folks in the education field. I think that the world is getting more and more complicated. I think it's more interconnected. The problems that we're all facing as a human society are getting more complex. And I think education is the best way for us to deal with a lot of those problems. And so all of my ventures kind of try to figure out different ways to prepare our students who are going to be the future leaders of these complex worlds to navigate those with the right knowledge, skills, and mindsets to do so.
Well, I was looking at your slogan, Can I just say that? And then we'll just talk about that. Just as it's preparing educators for a dynamic tomorrow. And that right there, that vision is, and you know, you, when you mentioned your why, and when you, when I talked about just that short little bit about you, it really is amazing. And how did you come up with that?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think the large majority of this kind of happened in high school for me, actually, as I was like trying to figure out ways to do something impactful in my community. And education was just a natural place for me to start thinking about that. And I think as like time went on, the types of problems that we were encountering, whether it be at the project I was leading, whether it be at like a variety of different teaching experiences and educational context that I worked with, the world kept changing. And there was always some new crisis that we all had to deal with, both as individuals, as an education system, and help our students prepare for. And so I think that's where the commitment to helping folks figure out exactly how they themselves can deal with these crises as educators, but also better serve their students during all these crises, whether it be something as simple as the introduction of a search engine or the introduction of one-to-one devices in your school, which can be quite jarring initially, to a election cycle that's extremely contentious, to a global pandemic, and now the advent of AI that's kind of uprooting a lot of our traditional like knowledge about what the world is and what it will be like.
Well, you're covering a lot, but you said something that you started in high school. You did. You started in high school. You need to share a little bit about your background with that. I mean, yeah, I think you said you started when you were 13.
Yeah, I was a sophomore in high school. I think folks kind of like at some point like start to question what the role of them, like what your role is in the world. And so I was a like early 10th grader who was trying to figure out like what I wanted out of life, right? Like everybody's talking about college and careers and figuring out what the next step is. And I think I was like kind of struggling to figure out what exactly I wanted out of life. And, you know, learning about like, and at the time I was also learning about like space and learning about like how small we all are in relative comparison. And so like as a young student, I think it was this whole jarring to think about, okay, like, you know, we have very limited time on the planet and there's only very few things that we can do that will like actually outlast our lives. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of like motivated me to try to figure out what kind of impact I could have that might exist beyond me. I was a nerdy student, and so the context I knew best was education. And so I was like, oh, like maybe I can take some of the things that I've like spent all these years honing, these skills I've spent years honing, and see if that can do some good in the world and not just, you know, help me ace the SAT or pass my next test. And so that's where it all started. We started with a test prep company and a tutoring company. It was a nonprofit. We did everything from like we held reading events where we had students who had parents whose parents had English as a second language, so we would read primary school books to those children in group context. We did free SAT classes. We did online tutoring and homework help for students all around the world. At one point, we had chapters in multiple different states. We had chapters opening up in different countries. And it was all student run. And I think that's where I was like very excited about it. Even as I graduated high school, I took a year off to work on the project with other high school students. It was just nice to see a bunch of like very young students taking ownership of a real organization, right? So this was an actual company. We had 501c3 status from the IRS. We were filing our taxes. And it was all student run. And so like there was no... even the paperwork, like the filing fee for the initial application to the IRS is like $500. We filled the paperwork out ourselves and we held a bake sale to pay for the IRS fee. And in retrospect, it's kind of like, it's something I'm kind of proud of and it's fun to talk about. Because I think it was a great learning moment for me in terms of the fact that like so much change can happen, even if you're like a random high schooler with no external support.
I mean, when you mentioned 13, and then you had your buddies and all of you were keeping this going and it went kind of worldwide. That gives a lot of us hope. If you could do that, anybody could do it, right? It's just 13. So how long did you have this business?
Yeah, so we ran that for 5 years. And I think at one point, like as I got to college, I was not able to keep up with the local organization and the leadership as much. And so as the students who hadn't worked directly with me kind of started graduating, I think there started to be a trickle effect of less and less like interest. Mm-hmm. There was less and less ability for someone to kind of do top-down management. So I kind of took the lessons I learned from that to kind of figure out what my next project was going to be that I could do from school and that, you know, 3 hours away from my hometown. And that one was, I wanted more students to do their own projects. Like that was kind of the impetus for the United for Social Change, which is still one of my ventures now. And that started at the end of my first gap year before I started freshman year of college. And that one I was like, okay, like this was really cool for me. I'm seeing lots of other students also learn how to like do something impactful in their communities. And folks are interested in it, but sometimes they just don't know like what issues even exist in their communities or worldwide. What skill sets can they develop to do something about it? And they need help with other peers or adults to do something about it. And so that's where Unicorn Association kind of started as a way for students to like go through those three-step process, where we still call it our three-step process 10 years later, where we help students kind of like learn what the issues are in the world, figure out which ones they care about, because we think that's important. Like, everybody doesn't have to care about climate change, but everybody has something they will care about, to help students figure out what that issue is, and then do something about it. So whether it be starting a nonprofit like I did, or writing a letter to your senator, or starting a recycling program at your school, there's a wide variety of what action can look like. It doesn't all have to look the same. We try to help students gain whatever skills they can to do that. And that was a learned lesson from the first organization, was that like students, when empowered, can do a lot of cool things that are impactful.
Well, we just have to give them the opportunity, and this opens the door. And you still have right. This is a nonprofit that you still are running, right?
That's right. Yeah.
So how did you get all this background? I mean, you went to college. Where did you, just give us a little bit about what you did and why. I don't even know how you did it while you were in college.
Yeah. So my background makes no sense to most folks who look at my like CV or whatever. I learned a lot of these things during high school, actually. So like everything from learning how to bookkeep and keep track of taxes. Even initially I learned coding in order to build our first website for that nonprofit. And so that kind of like the building a lot of different skill sets that as a startup entrepreneur, like, and a young startup entrepreneur, you don't have the resources to hire everybody to do something, right? So there was a lot of just like self-directed, Google, YouTube, / Barnes & Noble based learning. And that kind of just like, honestly, it was empowering. I think that's one thing that I hope that like, we also try to like show folks that like there's learning doesn't have to happen within your school system. And I think one of the things we hope that students learn as the world becomes more complex is that they can do that 15 years from now when the world looks very different from what they were preparing for in school, that they can just figure out there are so many resources to learn things. And hopefully becoming a better learner is the more important part. I did my bachelor's at Harvard. It was in philosophy. Which really honed in on the kinds of thinking that I wanted to do about big issues. A lot of it was focused on political philosophy, it was focused on gender justice, it was focused on educational justice, and all of that kind of helped me think through the kinds of problems that I wanted to solve, and just gain kind of a skill set to be able to talk about them and write about them. I also had a minor in Sanskrit and South Asian studies, so I did a little bit of exploring about my background, my faith. I did exploring about language and thinking about how humans communicated like thousands of years ago and how that's influenced how we communicate now. It was a very traditional, very liberal arts education in the sense that like, I took a computer science class, took a psychology class, I took a class on like Sufi poetry in Islamic South Asia, I took a class on Christian philosophy. It was a very wide range. I took a class on Lincoln Douglas debates and the rhetoric used during those speeches. It was just like, it was a proper exposure to like everything from some different aspect. And that also kind of started to build my viewpoint on what a good education needs to be for our earlier students. And so I saw the value of being able to learn all those different things in terms of how it made me better equipped to navigate the world. One of my professors used to say that like a good college education prepares you to read any section of the New York Times. And so he's like, you should go to pick up the New York Times and open the art section, the science section, the current events section, and make sense of it. And that's what a good college education ought to do. And that's what makes you a good voter, because voting also happens across different issues. So you can't just be an expert in one particular sector and make a good decision about who you're going to vote for. And I think to me that college was too late for that. And college also has a massive price tag. I was very, very privileged and fortunate enough to go to Harvard to get that kind of education, but not everybody is. And so that means that we're putting a price tag on who becomes an effective citizen. And that doesn't sound very democratic to me. And so a lot of our work has become about bringing a lot of that kind of interdisciplinary civics education to the K-12 level. And so hoping that we can get more of that into the public education system.
Oh, well, it's so well-rounded. I mean, poetry and Sanskrit. I mean, that's pretty darn cool. Can you speak Sanskrit?
I cannot speak it. It's spoken only in one village now in India, but I can read. So it's definitely a written, it's more to read, like actual old poetry and religious texts and even philosophical texts that are exist from back when Sanskrit was a primary language.
That's amazing, because it's... I mean, I try to learn languages, and it's harder when you're older. It's it's nice. I mean, for me, I think that children should start very, very young learning multiple languages just right. because it's good for your brain. And then it opens the world to you. It's amazing. Wow, that is so darn cool. So you're still running, you know, your nonprofit, but then you founded pedagogy.ai. Is that recent?
Yeah. So pedagogy.ai is a product that I offer through pedagogy.cloud. Mm-hmm. And pedagogy.cloud was started in college. One of the things I realized was that running a nonprofit is expensive, and bills need to be paid. And so I started basically a for-profit company that leveraged a lot of the skills I learned running my nonprofit to help other institutions, whether it be, we initially are some of our early clients were other nonprofits, they were universities, small schools, and that's kind of continued to grow since then. And it's basically offering a full suite of services to educational institutions so that they don't have to worry about the non-educational components of running an educational organization. And so we do everything from helping with the finances and bookkeeping and keeping up with financial strategy to doing some marketing work, building websites and custom platforms. My favorite work always is the one that's directly related to the pedagogical work that these institutions do. And so we are building a mastery learning platform for argumentation with one of our clients. That's one of my favorite projects to work on. Mm-hmm. And over the years, we've done different things for different folks. And so we spent a lot of the pandemic working with institutions across the country to help extracurricular activities for students go online. Wow. We work with almost every major university, a lot of major school districts across the country, and the independent nonprofits who ran debate competitions and ethics bowl competitions, and helped them all keep those activities and competitions going when they all couldn't meet in person like they normally did for those activities. So there's such a wide variety, and I love it. I get to dabble in a lot of different things, speak to a lot of different people. And also think about the same thing from a lot of different angles. So there's, education isn't just about the curriculum and standards. There's marketing involved, there's finance involved, there's coding and development involved. Big decisions and strategy involved. And then there's navigating immediate crises that's also involved. And so.
Wow. So when you work with a school or a school district or higher ed, are you working with the leaders? Are you working with the teachers or professors? I mean, how are you? I mean,
yeah,
what do you
there's
offer?
There's a limit of all of it. I get to work
really?
With everybody. So, yeah,
oh,
that's great.
Wow.
So, we've been hired to come work directly with students, which we always enjoy. We've been hired
that.
To I just got out of a PD session with just admin across the school districts, and we were just sitting with district leaders and superintendents and principals. We do a lot of work direct with teachers these days with AI. So we have lots of teachers who come to our events. They read a book I've written on AI in education. They listen to our webinars. They take our courses. Everybody in education we play some role with everybody. So which is, again, I think it's great to see education from all the different angles.
This is bigger than I thought, but you mentioned AI, and I read part of your book, the AI and the future of education. Oh, there's a lot of things we can talk about right now. Is that okay if we go deep into this? Because I think people are really interested in it, and you have all this background. So that's why you wrote the book. You wanted people to have a background of it, right?
Yeah, I think there was a realization that this weird path I took of coding and learning computer science and also staying quite connected with different forms of education meant that I had some way of navigating this this new era of education that I thought could be helpful. The book is my favorite thing to talk about right now. So I think it's definitely on everybody's mind in different ways. I think there's also people who are excited and people who are scared and people who are just okay, I'm hearing a lot about it, but I don't really yet care about it. And so any of those people I'm happy to talk to. And so we can talk about it from many of those angles.
Well, we probably should, because I went to your website on pedagogy.ai. No, why? That's right?
That's,
I got to make sure people
right.
know that.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
And you have all the chapters laid out, but you also have, you give away chapter one. So I read chapter one and got to get your book because I want to read it all. But I thought, let's talk about some of it, because right in the beginning, the whole idea of there are some people that really are excited about AI, but they're also scared of AI, right? They're not sure what that means for their own job. So let's just say teachers, you're talking to some teachers. What do you say to them?
Yeah. So when we talk to teachers, we have to start with like what everybody's concerned about, which is the plagiarism side. Mm-hmm. And I unfortunately don't really have good news about it, which I think starts to make people a little bit upset with me when I start talking. But the fact is that like a lot of our traditional assignments, they won't be relevant, and they aren't relevant anymore in a world where students can do them really quickly with AI. Now, at the same time, and I think this is the stance I take in the book, is that just because like those assignments aren't relevant doesn't mean that what we want our students to learn, the goals we have for our students, have dramatically shifted because of this new technology, right? The kinds of things we want for our students are the exact same. The kinds of things that they need to learn in school are probably relatively the same. There's probably more stuff we should teach them because of AI, but there's not really anything that is no longer relevant in the scheme of like building a good student who can navigate the complex world that they will inherit. And so I think those are my two things. It's like, yes, I understand why you're scared about AI. And you're right to be scared because it is changing everything you have to do. But also, we just have to rethink our tactics more than rethink our goals. And I think that brings people's fears down a little bit in terms of, okay, like the reason I got into education, that still stands, right? I still want to, the same ends I want to have for my students in mind, those I can still have. I just have to rethink what I'm doing in my classroom a little bit. It's also really important for us to like start talking to them about like how different exposure to the technology is important for the student in terms of what they're going to end up doing long term. And so while a teacher might think, oh, I don't really need this AI tool to make a lesson plan, the students will need to use AI in whatever jobs they decide to pursue long term. And so that's one of the things that we try to help teachers see, is that like students will encounter AI no matter what. They'll see it in election cycles. They'll see it on their social media profiles. They'll see it in every single like app that they use, and any single you know website they open. There'll be some form of AI, and we need to make responsible users of it. So we need to show them how to use this in a way that's ethical, that's productive, and it helps society and doesn't hurt it. And also that so that they can protect themselves from malicious use of the technology. So a lot of this is, again, is very daunting, and it's huge. And I think like that's reasonable, but I think that the reality is that the technology it's escalated at such a pace that there's a lot of catching up that we have to do within education.
Well, I actually like to explore with AI. I have one I was going to share with you because I just used it last week. It's called PI.AI. It's empathetic AI. It's a personal assistant. And I needed to talk to my doctor and I needed to figure out how do I reword this so I'm do this, this, and this. So I asked PI to, you know, that AI, I asked them. And what came back was, dearest Barbara, I can hear you're struggling. And I'm like, oh my God, it's like a human. It's like right. What they wrote was perfect. I had to change it. But I was collaborating with the AI in a way that I really had no one else to ask. You call it a thinking buddy.
Right.
For me, that's what it felt like, but a very empathetic one. It got to the point where it even sounded like I might have known this person.
Right.
Is that what when you said thinking buddy, because that's in your, some of the things, how can we assure teachers, give them examples and share with them some strategies that they can model and then, even leaders, administrators, anybody.
Yeah, and that's the next thing we do with folks is that we kind of help them see how AI can serve in their own workflow as a thinking partner, as a teaching assistant, as a thinking buddy. And I think there's some really easy ways, right? So if you're working on a lesson plan and you're like, okay, like I have everything here, but I really want to change this activity to be a bit more engaging, put that into ChatGPT or any of the AI technologies and tell it that. Say, hey, I'm working with a group of 30 students in fourth grade learning like about rocks. And I have this activity that's pretty boring because it's a PowerPoint right now. What else can I do that might be engaging? And that's a great way for teachers to start see the potential for the technology to actually help them like think through things, not replace them, right? Like we humans are going to be part of the teaching process no matter what. We like humans a lot. We like learning from humans. So feeling like no matter how empathetic this bot will seem, like at the end of the day, a human will always be better for us. And I think that we even saw some of that during the pandemic, right? We didn't find Zoom education good enough. And that was across the computer with other humans on the other side of it. We saw student engagement rates fall. We saw higher levels of depression and anxiety in students. So imagine if on the other side of it, there's not their teacher, but now a robot. Like, teachers aren't going away, right? Like, students fundamentally do better with an actual human. And so the question is, how can that human use it to make their life easier? Like, we have a burnout crisis in the country. We have teachers who are dealing with all kinds of paperwork requirements, large classrooms. Is AI technology could be that partner for them to offload some of that hard work that isn't directly student-facing, but still takes up a good chunk of their time. And so, after drafting an email to a parent, I got an angry email from a parent. Like, who wants to spend a lot of time thinking about how to respond to an angry parent email? Sometimes it's a bureaucratic thing to deal with as a teacher. Give that off to AI. It can be more patient. It doesn't have to have an emotional reaction to it. And it can draft something for you that you can edit and then send. And those are the kinds of things we hope that teachers and administrators can start to see, that the AI technology has some productive uses that don't involve, like, you know, dramatically restructuring the entire classroom, that can save them a lot of time.
I love that answer that you just said, because I work with teachers a lot who they're supposed to be collaborating with the guardian or the parents, and they have, what is it, how many kids in the class, or if they're a resource teacher or a counselor, they have all the kids, and, you know, how do they do this? And AI is a wonderful partner, just like you said. I'm so glad you said that. So what is the role of AI in conversations regarding equity and inclusion in the classroom?
Yeah, this one's a tough one, because I think there's a lot of folks who are really optimistic about the potential of AI to solve a lot of our educational problems in education. Mm-hmm. And so there's folks who think it's like the personalized learning and the access to a tutor, all those things would make education more accessible and hopefully help with the equity and inclusion issues that we've faced in the past. I'm a bit more cautious. I think that there's a lot that needs to go right in order for that to actually happen. I think in the short term, if the technology is only embraced by the schools with the largest budgets and the largest resources to provide PD to their teachers, then we're only going to make that gap even worse, right? So the students who actually need this the most might not get it because their schools can't afford or don't have the resources to actually onboard teachers to give them the training they need to use the technology effectively. And so then we'll have a bunch of students who already were, you know, in a better situation, who are now also know how to use AI effectively. And then you have students who are already suffering, who now are also behind because they're also behind on AI. And so making sure that we work with the school districts who are struggling to implement AI, and that probably means lots of top-down policies from education departments. It probably means making sure that we have funding put in place for schools to buy these tools and do training for their teachers. But that's one concern I definitely have. The other is these algorithms themselves have issues, right? So there's biases within them. They're trained on all of human content, and we humans are, you know, very biased. And there's lots of a lot of our content, especially on the internet, is full of stereotypes, and there's gender biases and race biases in there. And all of those get replicated when the content produced by these algorithms. And so we want to make sure that when we're bringing these things into our classroom, we're not bringing more of that kind, you know, more biases and more problematic content. And that's going to require teachers to be trained in recognizing those from AI content. It's going to be empowering students to recognize biases in this and think through, oh, what about its data set might have caused it to say this way. My favorite example has been, like, if you ask it for a picture of a CEO, it shows you a white male. Like four or five images that it generates are all of white men. And that's just a great example of, like, the AI algorithm isn't, like, it doesn't have a bias of its own, right? It doesn't think, it's using patterns it's seen in data. And across the internet, when folks talk about stock images of CEOs, are often white men. And so that's what it learned. That's how humans think about CEOs. And so, but that's dangerous when we're using that to replicate and create more content for our students. And so that's one thing where I think, like, making sure we have the right conversations about what technology we're bringing in and how are we empowering teachers and students to talk about the DEI issues related to it, so that we avoid further making these problems worse, is an important component.
Well, that's a great example, but there's so many. So right. I'm thinking that what you probably do is, and this is what I would love to sit in on, is like scenarios. If this is such and such happened, and let's experiment with it, let's do a search based on that and ask AI, and let's talk about what you got. And so you give them that time to do that. Is that something Does that sound like what you're doing?
Yeah. So a lot of our AI literacy things that we've planned with students and provide teachers to do with students are based on having them experiment with these tools and then spend some time critically analyzing the output. I think that's an important skill set that we all need to learn, is how do we like better deal with any output that's created. And I think we, you know, this was part of the narrative post the social, like the booming social media. It was like, oh, how do you know when you're in an echo chamber? How do you know when you're seeing something that's false news? All of those kinds of things are just more true now with AI, because it's even more perfectly manipulated to exactly what you want to hear. It can be more disguised. And so those same skill sets are relevant, right? We need to know when to be able to figure out fact from fiction. We need to be able to figure out when we're being manipulated. All those, that skill set needs to be developed by analyzing actual output and seeing, okay, what about this should I be skeptical about?
So your book is called AI and the Future of Education. Do you have, is there a future of AI? Did you come up with some predicting where it's going to go and in the book? So, I'm just curious.
No, that's a good question. And I think I end the book with the fact that I don't think any of us know exactly what's going to happen in 5 to 10 years. And so I think there are things we do know, right? There's AI is not going anywhere. So anything that's already capable like that will continue to be capable and only get stronger. Even in the last year, we've seen like the technology dramatically increasing capabilities. And so I think initially when it came out, it was like, oh, it's a fad, like it's going to go away. It's like any other like fad that happens in education. But the reality is this is not just about education. This is not just about one particular context. Mm-hmm. This is dramatically upending our society, right? So their entire jobs are being restructured around this. There's actual threats to our national security, to election cycles. That it's much more than the newest like ed tech tool in our school. It's dramatically changing how our society is structured. And so that means that we need to prepare our students for whatever dynamic world that means, right? And the large part of this is that a lot of these factors are not within our control. So we don't know what jobs will exist. We don't know what jobs will be created. We don't know how governments will deal with that, right? This proposal is that like the government will implement a universal basic income. Like, what are the chances of that? Is that actually going to happen? If that happens, what does that mean for what we do with our free time? I mean, these are such large questions. And as a philosopher, this is great because you're going to test against like all kinds of assumptions that we have about what humanity is and what society is. But those are all the kinds of things that we need to be asking ourselves about. If any of these things go in a particular way, will our students still be able to make use of the education they got? And so that's the only thing I leave folks with, is like, we know the world is, there's a lot of unknowns, but given that is a known, right? The known is that there's unknowns. And then, so can we make sure that this, however those things settle out, our students will be better equipped?
Well, I'm thinking I'm going to be better equipped. You just gave me so much in this talk. I can't believe, because when we talked before, there was so much I thought, oh, he's not going to be able to bring that in. And he brought it in. Britton, you're just amazing. Is there anything? I want your book. I want to put it up. I'm going to share it on the post. But is there anything else about the book you want to share that maybe we didn't talk about?
Yeah, I mean, I think just like folks, I know there are folks who are really, really scared of this and they're like frightened to even think about it. There's also folks who just like, who don't see themselves as people who are technology people or tech savvy. And I think that I hope that the book has served as like an introduction for all of those folks. There's a little bit of this that kind of like builds up towards these larger conversations that kind of helps you see what AI even is, what that means, how these algorithms are created. Because I think that kind of basic understanding is important for all of us to gain so that we can have these conversations with our students. And so I think like taking this, like starting the process somewhere, whether it be my book, whether it be an op-ed that you read on the internet, whether it be someone else's blog post or a webinar, all those kinds of things, I think, are just like starting to have these conversations amongst teachers and amongst educators as a whole will be important for us to really ask the bigger questions that need to be asked about what education needs to look like in the next 5 years at the least. Yeah.
Well, one thing we did talk about is, because I do a little bit about personal learning, personalized learning, all of that, is some people are concerned that it's not going to be their voice, not going to be them. Right. And so I know that in your book, you have a whole piece on that. You talk about it. And I'm sure that's something you approached in the conversations.
Yeah. I mean, and I think this is where a lot of this has to do with how we frame things to our students and we frame things for ourselves. I think that the role of AI technology has to be to augment our voices. Like, we need to figure out, how can we teach students to use these AI technologies to better articulate and better get their voices out there and be more effective? and not necessarily replace them, right? And I think this is where we have to realize that, like, there is a value, humanity has a value intrinsically to other humans. And this is seen across, like, across history and across time. We still go watch humans race around a racetrack, even though cars can go faster, because we think it's fascinating when a human can go fast. Right? When you read a poem written by a Holocaust survivor versus a poem written by ChatGPT, your emotive response is different because you know that there's context to that person's history, the context of the person's pain, and that you only feel because there's another human on the other side of the writing. And I think that those are the kinds of things that we need to make sure that our students understand, that like their humanness is unique, their humanity is unique, and how do we make sure that that can be accentuated, that can be further developed using AI and not necessarily squashed and gotten rid of.
Well, that's a beautiful way to pull this together. This was wonderful. So anything new that's next for you that you want to share? Or the main thing is the book? Or I can't believe I had you on my show. This is so cool.
No, this is a lot of fun. And I think this is my foreseeable future, I think, for now. I think there's so many conversations to be had with educators all around the country and, in fact, the world. And we're starting to have those conversations across the country. Most schools still aren't implementing any PD on AI. Lots of folks have been having the conversations. And so we're trying to go out there and, you know, talk to as many people as possible, be on shows like this where we can reach educators at all different levels and make sure that they start asking these questions. And it's so like cliche and probably sounds trite, but like the conversations amongst educators is the only way to get through this crisis. Like if I sit in my room, like coding something or like writing something, it's not going to solve anything. Mm-hmm. This is definitely a problem that we as educators all have to like put our heads together, think about what we value for our students and for ourselves, and then come up with the next solution through conversation. So lots of talking is in my future, I guess, is the short answer.
Oh, well, I'm sure glad I'm part of this right now. And now, since people are listening, how can they reach you?
Yeah, I think the best way to reach us is on our Instagram. So it's all of our social media handles are at Pedagogy Cloud. But our Instagram is where we post the most. We have lots of tips for teachers. We kind of distill any of the latest AI updates. I put any of the podcasts, including yours, on there when it's out. So if you prefer to listen to it, that's a great way to access it. And then the second place where all of our more concrete resources like the book and PD opportunities and webinars and courses, pedagog.ai is the website. And that's where you'll find a lot of that. If you're interested in the civic stuff and you want to see what it might mean to integrate interdisciplinary civics education at the K-12 level, we have lots of resources at unitedforsc.org. And that's where we have all the animated videos and lesson plans and all of that's available for free on there for you to play around with and see how it might fit into your curriculum.
So I'm going to put all of your resources, and you're helping me put the post together. So yeah. We'll make sure that people can get to the links just in case they, are still trying to find you. So, My gosh, this was so fantastic.
Thank you. This was a lot of fun. It was good to talk about it from a high level.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know about high level, but on my porch, my virtual porch, that was like the coolest ever. And I really learned a lot. So thank you so much for being here with me today.
Thank you so much for giving me space.
Thank you for listening to the Rethinking Learning podcast and my conversation with Preeton Shaw, whose why is to better prepare educators and learners for a dynamic tomorrow. I was so excited to have this conversation with Preeton because that is my why. His new book, AI in the Classroom, is timely and informative. Make sure you check out the blog post that goes with this podcast on my website, barbarabray.net. You'll learn more about Preeton's journey that started when he was an entrepreneur at only 13 years old. And now he's pioneering educational solutions that meet diverse learner needs around the world. So go ahead and share our conversation with your friends. It would be awesome if you subscribe to my podcast. I'd be really grateful if you wrote a review. Thanks again for listening. Keep sharing your story and please stay safe and be well.